Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of the Infrared Podcast. I'm Michele, your host, and today I'm incredibly happy to have here with me Romaric from France, who is the CEO and co-founder of Covery. Hello Romaric, how are you?
Yeah, hello Michele. I'm good, I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me. It's great.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. I gotta say, I first learned about Covery because I was asking for a better alternative to Heroku and other container as a services companies on Twitter. And someone told me, you should definitely try Covery. You won't regret it. And I gotta say, I'm not regretting it. So that's why I've invited you, because I have some questions. And I also want people to learn more about Covery, because I feel like it's a great product and can definitely bring some great developer and most of all a great DevOps experience, you know, to many companies. So that's what I'd like to talk about with you during the episode. And yeah, so first question, how was the idea of Covery started?
Yeah, actually, so thanks for all of that. So it's interesting because you mentioned like we are like a container as a service solution. That's something that we were using at the beginning of the company. Now we are not defining the product as a container as a service, but it's true that we are using the container technology just to package and deploy the application. So it's true. And the idea behind Covery is super simple. We were doing that. So the founding team, we are like a super technical guys, hired by the best company to do what we know to do, meaning like deploying, helping developers just to ship their application at some point. and we just decided to, instead of doing that for like the next successful company that will pay like a lot to hire us, just to do that for everyone that would like to hire us. So basically you can take Covery, install it on your cloud account to deploy your application, that you get what we call a state-of-the-art continuous deployment platform right away, instead of spending months. That's the idea. It's quite like a bit maybe not super like storytelled, but that's the reality.
Totally describes how it's working, and I gotta say, I tried Covery and I was blown away by the opportunity of deploying something to production in like 1 minute. That's impressive. I mean, when I first looked at the first tutorial I've seen, maybe it wasn't that tutorial, it was in a talk you gave at HazuraConf, and you said, okay, this is how you deploy Hazura on Covery. And I got distracted for like 10 seconds. And when I came back, I was like, how did he do that? How is it possible in just like 10 seconds? I'm not kidding. He got an entire Hazura infrastructure deployed to Covery, and this is mind-blowing because it's really taking all the difficulties that DevOps engineer can face for building complex release pipelines and, you know, everything related to it, and you can do it in like 10 seconds. So that's impressive. How do you do that? So that's another question I'd like to explore. How do you typically do that on the on the backend side of things?
Yeah, you're right. So we invested a lot. So we are all today, we are like 15 in the teams. We are all engineers coming from the same companies mostly. And we know how we can be like just painful to deploy your application. So we have optimized the full process of deploying the applications, meaning that we cache the different step and we try to accelerate and boost all of that. And maybe one thing that I want just to cover is that Covery, the idea behind the scenes, we are not like replacing any DevOps. It's we provide like a fully ready deployment stack that they can install on their infrastructure. So it's the 90% of their need that we cover. And from that, if they want to go beyond what we provide for sure, then they can start to do whatever they want. For instance, we have customers that are using Kafka behind the scenes, something that is not supported by Covery directly officially, but they can do those kinds of things. So yeah, we spend a lot of time because when you see, it's interesting your reaction about that, because when you talk about like deploying the application, it could be like, yeah, it's quite simple. You take the application, you package it into like a container, then you provision like some services, and that's it. But in fact, it's not really the case. You have to think about all the different steps configuring the VPC, the networks, the domain, and all those little steps at the end takes like a huge amount of time. And the idea of Curry is just to provide a complete pipeline, deployment pipeline right away, and which is also optimized.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really awesome. And you actually support different cloud providers, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We started it, so it's quite interesting because when you when you look at the cloud providers that we are supporting, so we do support AWS and then DigitalOcean and then Scaleway. Maybe for some of our prospect user, it doesn't make any sense, and they are always like asking, "Why are you like supporting DigitalOcean and Scaleway and not GCP and Azure right now?" It's just like it's a pure business choice. Because today, for our target customers that are mostly companies that are growing a lot, using AWS, it's just what they want. You see, it's like it represents more than 90% of the market that we're targeting. And then from that, we have decided to also support DigitalOcean and Scaleway for different like strategic reasons. And we plan to support others, so GCP and Azure, in Q1 or Q2 2022. Yeah.
Okay, great. So thinking about a strategy, you know, about supporting, for example, DigitalOcean, let's say DigitalOcean, that is the one I definitely know better other than, you know, AWS and Google Cloud Platform. I feel like that's a good decision for me as a customer because there's a reason why. They provide a good free plan, first of all, which is fine. So if you're starting a business, if you're boosting up, you know, a startup, you can, I imagine, you can try to attach Quovery to DigitalOcean, for example, or to Google Cloud Platform, who has another amazing free plan. And then you can say, okay, now I need to scale. Now I need to support more features and I need better support from, you know, other kind of features that AWS only can provide to me or Google Cloud Platform or Azure. So I can start small and I can grow big with a unique interface. So this is something that Quovery can really help me achieving. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're completely right. And we have customers that are doing exactly what you described. For instance, we get customers that were like on AWS and then they moved on Scaleway and the opposite way, companies on DigitalOcean and then moved at the end on AWS. And it's quite interesting. And in fact, it's super aligned with our vision of the cloud that will be like the cloud must be super frictionless the way that you put your workloads. There is like some couple of challenges, but we are working on that. But that's basically what we can offer and provide to our customers. Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to start on DigitalOcean because you're super familiar with and you don't want to pay too much, then it's great. And then when you start to have like maybe real business applications, you want to have like different features that are provided by the other cloud provider, then you are completely free to do that with the same experience. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that could also help when migrating to, to another cloud provider, starting from, let's say, from AWS to Google Cloud Platform, just like Terraform does. And I know that Quovery supports Terraform notations, so that could also help, I guess. But you could also say, okay, you know what? For the services I'm using, maybe AWS is not the better platform for me, so I want to migrate to Azure or Google Cloud Platform, and I only have to do that switch on Quovery. I don't have to migrate everything manually like I'm used to, you know, without Quovery. So that's another interesting point I'd like to explore more. So how did you eventually get into supporting multiple cloud platforms with just one common user interface? That's interesting on the engineering side and architectural side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. You're completely right. And in fact, it's all the difficulty and all the challenge that we have to face. And that's why it takes like so much time to build the platform. We do exist for 2 years now. We started, we had at the time like 50 developers using our platform. And now we have more than 12,000 using it from more than 100 countries. And what happened is that during this period, we took the time to consolidate and build that platform that make like super smooth, homogeneous any cloud provider. So what we have built is, so you can see covering two different pieces. On the backend side, we have what we call the control plane that is in charge of receiving the event from the web interface and the CLI, and also the different integrations with the Git providers. And we have what we call the deployment engine that is open source and written in Rust that is abstracting all those layers. So the network, the cloud provider, the different services that are managed by that. And that part is so open source and is installed on the cloud infrastructure of our customers. So if you are like going to use AWS, then it's going to be like a vanilla Kubernetes that is installed on your infrastructure. So it's the cover engine that is installing the Kubernetes and is installing itself on the Kubernetes, and from that is able to manage so the stateless application and also the stateful one.
Yeah, that's outstanding. If I'm thinking on how complexity you're abstracting with that solution, that's just incredible. And okay, so you said the whole engine is open source and it's written in Rust. So that brings me to two questions. The first one is, why did you choose Rust over, let's say, Golang or other system programming languages?
Yeah, there is two responses for that. So the real one and the not real one. So no, in fact, it's like a combination of both. But the pragmatic one is because we need to have like a high reliability of this element that is running on the infrastructure of our customers. So what we want to be sure is that when we, because we are working with health tech companies, fintech, insurtech, you can imagine that they are like running a real business. And when they install SoCovery, they just want to make sure that it's going to work, you see. So having like a language used, so Rust, which is great, is the type system that is used. Then at the compile time, you can know if your application is going to work at least correctly or not. Sometimes it doesn't mean that it will work the way that you expect, but at least it will not crash.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty good. On that part, even if you are like using, because the predominant language that is used in the industry, the cloud industry, is Go, but Go you can have like tons of failure at the runtime, even if it's a great, absolutely great. We are using Go as well. I'm not like detailing all the different pieces that we are installing on the cloud account of our customer, but we are using Go, but Go is used on the non-critical part. So that's the main reason to bring like this stability, because at the beginning of Covery, so if I look back maybe, it was 16 months ago, we were using Python, and you can imagine Python is great in terms of productivity, but we had some issues.
I guess you had, yeah.
And I really love Python, you see. But it can be like a bit painful when you start to run in production. So yeah, this stability element is super important. And the other aspect that I'm not talking so much, so it's like an exclusivity for you, Michael,
awesome.
Is I really like I really like, in fact, I really love Rust myself, so I'm super passionate about technical stuff. And I really wanted to give it a try, because I think it's a language that has a lot of potential into this industry, and I wanted to just invest a bit more into that and see what we can do at the same time. So sometimes you try to fit the business interest with your personal interest, and this is where Rust were like the the best element for that.
Yeah, I gotta say, I have a strange, let's say, I have a strange relationship with Rust. And that's because I come from functional programming languages. I come from Elixir, bit of Haskell. And when I do write code, I do main write in a functional light way. And that doesn't always make the Rust compiler happy. Let's say that, because of the concept of ownership of, you know, memory management and ownership, borrowing, whatever. Let's say I have to change my mind when I do write Rust, and I don't do write it a lot because I'm still learning, but I definitely see the advantage in learning more about Rust, because I can clearly see how powerful it can be. And yeah, so I guess I have to hang on Golang and invest myself more on Rust.
It definitely changed the way that you. I do program for more than 10 years, and I used to work in Python, Java, Kotlin, Groovy, Scala, tons of different languages, as you can see. So mostly backends on the backend side, and definitely when you start to use and learn Rust, it's like different way of thinking. You be like better product, better application, even in other languages. It's great. For instance, we have like something that is concrete. So on the backend side, we are using Kotlin, and it's great because one of our backend engineers, senior backend engineer, is also a big fan of Haskell functional programming, and he's working as well on Rust. And what he made is that, you know, you have unchecked exception on Kotlin. So if you start to throw anything an exception, then you can just crash your application. So what he did is that he enforced the return. So we have like a convention at queries that we are returning a result. So, you know, it's so a result, so an enum, so it's taking two arguments, so the value that you want to return and the error. And we have absolutely we have the same concept, so the same type system concept that you can get and you can find in the functional programming space into Kotlin. So that's the thing that we want to bring, and it's great because the backends that we have, the control plane, is super super stable. And thanks for this implementation, he did like just a great work on that. So this is where you can see that Rust, even Rust, can influence other languages the way that you program with them.
So at this point, that brings me to something I was thinking about Haskell, that it was like an industry-changing programming language, even though it rarely saw production. And actually, Rust is a kind of improvement over that because I see that not only it sees production on daily basis, but also it's changing the approach we are taking on other programming languages, which is incredible. And my question is, the solution you were talking about on Kotlin, it's something we will see open sourced. It's something we will see, widely spread in the community, or it's something you will keep proprietary for, I mean, there are many good reasons for doing that. So.
Are you talking, Mikael, are you talking about like open sourcing the control plane, or is it like the
Oh, no,
methodology
sorry.
that
I was
you
talking about the
in
methodology. Yeah.
Okay. In fact, it's something that you can find into. You have like a very famous functional library that you can find in Kotlin that is called
Okay.
Arrow. You have this concept, but we are quite efficient the way that we developed. And you know, you don't want to bring like a library that is sizing maybe 10 megabytes just because you want to have access to those features. So, you know, we just re-implemented those features. It's quite straightforward. So it's something, in fact, if you are looking for that, I can give you even like share a link into like a common library, public one.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'd like that. And okay, that's awesome. And one other question. I've seen that you have, oh, I'm going out of topic totally right now because I have many questions and too little time. But as always.
I'm yours.
Okay, that's awesome. So talking about your CLI and talking about your user interface, they are both awesome. For what I tried. And it's incredible how easy it is to set up Qvery using a command line. And what's your, so taking your point of view, what's your preferred way for using Qvery at this point? User interface, command line? Because I've seen you put too much effort into both, and I'd really love to understand if you had any preference from your current point of view.
It's something that has changed during the last month, because the first version of Qvery were only manageable through the CLI. The main reason is like a technical reason, is that we were only three, four in the team. No front-end engineers at the beginning, so only back-end. And it was like the easiest way just to launch the product. So we had this CLI available. And the idea behind Qvery is just to make all the things like in the GitOps way. So meaning that you have a configuration file that is versioned into your Git repository, and then you are able from that managing your application deployment and infrastructure. So it was great, but we started to have like some problems while we were like managing more complex infrastructure applications, for instance, because we are managing monorepository applications coming from different repositories as well. It could be like also Git providers, microservices, and so on and so forth. So what we decided at some point, we just decided to rewrite from scratch and stop like managing the overall infrastructure with this file that were like version. And this is where we started to change the way of thinking, and providing like a web interface was like super important. Just, you know, for one thing that is not related to all of that is that you, for a product like ours, a product, when you start to talk to customer and you show just the CLI and not a web interface, they can't materialize, in fact, the product. There is no product for them. It's just like a pipeline of something, you see? And that, in the mind, it's completely crazy because it's the same. At the end, you have the same, it's the same value. But in terms of perception, it's completely different.
Yeah.
And providing a web interface change all of that, definitely. So first, we solve that problem. So all the different problems that I mentioned, the monorepository, the multi-repository, and so on and so forth. And we also give access to like an interface that is usable, because the promise of Coveri is to make sure that any developer can deploy their application. And we've like starting to use a CLI. For some of them, like it's a bit painful. It's quite difficult. And using the web interface is super straightforward. So that way, like, today, so to respond to your questions on my side, I'm still like a CLI guy, but I'm using more and more. And today I'm using like 90% of the time. Obviously, I'm using, in fact, the web interface because it's super, super convenient. And we are talking a lot about deployment, but Coveri goes beyond that. We have the concept of environment, so you can get the production, development, staging, and we are able also to clone the environment. We are able to create new environment based on your pull request and all of that. So you can imagine we can do a lot. What does that mean? It means that with a CLI, it starts to be like super difficult to get faster the full power of Coveri. With a web interface, it's super interactive. It's quite simple. It's the world is changing, but still, you can control your infrastructure. You mentioned that by the CLI and the Terraform provider that we provide. Yeah.
Okay, that's amazing. That's probably the answer I was waiting for. And you actually talked about how you can materialize the product by looking at the user interface, because you can look in the eyes of the products. Let's say that. I remember I talked with Rita, which is director of product at Cloudflare, and we talked about how Cloudflare, for example, it's putting a lot of effort into creating a better developer experience when compared to other players, such as, let's say, AWS, which is not the most user-friendly platform out there. That's my words, of course. But and it's quite strange, I gotta be honest, to see a cloud company working a lot into creating better user interfaces, better developer experience. And that's something I actually only experienced it with Cloudflare or Heroku. And Google Cloud Platform, it's quite beautiful when compared to other competitors. Yeah. But that's interesting. Yeah. It's really interesting for me to see that a company is investing so much in a good user interface, because that's, you know, a kind of part of the whole infrastructure that many cloud providers are like, I don't care about this, because the important thing is to be high provisioned, super reliable, and whatever happens to the user interface, we just don't care. Yeah. But that's not the case for Coveri. So if anyone listening is interested in looking at this, I would totally recommend trying also the CLI, but also the user interface, because it's really, really well made.
Yeah. You mentioned something that is quite interesting is you have, you know, it's how it goes. You have, so I think AWS, the culture of AWS is quite powerful, because the idea is they are like super customer focused. So what does that mean? It means, you know why the experience sucks a bit on their product. It's not because they don't want to invest into that. It's because they make they want when they have like a customer. So the customer that they get on their first version of their product like 15 years ago, they want to make sure that those customer, if they don't change their code, then their infrastructure is still working as they expect.
Oh yeah,
and this
sure.
is something that you find only at AWS. It's crazy. It's they are completely customer obsessed, and it's great. It's great because it means that we have. It's what we try to do is to fixing their experience for the next generation of customers and developers, so that on top of their super reliable infrastructure. And that's something that I really want to put here, is that AWS service in terms of infrastructure, it's great. Trust me, I used to be like a system engineer 10 years ago in the financial industry, working like on different systems that were great, but managing production, it's like such a mess. It's crazy. And when I see, and we are using AWS in production for the control plane, the coverage control plane, and since we have launched coverage, we had like zero problem. It's crazy. I can't imagine the people that are behind like working on that. It's like just crazy. For me, it's like completely crazy.
I get this. They are super, really. I don't even know how they do the magics that they are doing. I was mainly talking about the user interface, which you don't need it because you can do everything by there using anyone's CLI, so Google Cloud, Azure, whatever. Yeah. You can always use the CLI, but it's also, you know, nice. If you have a small project, you just want to try it.
Yeah,
and also at enterprise level, which is the current business line I'm focusing on at my daily job, we are developing at enterprise level. And when I have to deploy my POC, my MVPs, it's kind of handy have a friendly user interface for deploying them without setting up complex pipelines. So that's absolutely... Yeah. Appreciate it from my side.
Yeah, it's completely insane. Sometimes you spend like so much time like trying to deploy your application instead of developing it, so it's quite frustrating.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense, and I got I'm a super aligned. That's why we have like so much customers today, prospect that are coming into Covery, because they don't want to like spend so much time. They don't understand how it works, and to be honest, we are also AWS themselves, they know about that. That's why they are like partnering with us. We are partnering with them, and it's great because they have like a great infrastructure, but the experience could be like better. That's what we think. So I'm totally aligned with you.
Yeah, I remember your line from the Techstars, if I remember correctly. I've saw your pitch at Techstars, and it's incredible. And I remember you said, "We want to make the cloud easy again." And that's right.
Yes,
I gotta say, mission accomplished. That's for sure. And,
but it's not finished yet. We have like still a lot of things to do to make like even simpler. We want to support much more than just container. We want to support like lambdas, workers, gateways, tons of things that are like so common in the industry. Just to make it sure that anyone can use that and get the full power, the full potential of those cloud providers, but in just like simple clicks. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you actually anticipated my last question, which was, where do you see the future of Covery? No, that's totally fine. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad we got here, naturally, because it's super interesting. I have absolutely no idea how you can handle lambdas, for example, and that would be really interesting to know. Maybe in the future, maybe we can talk again about that, because it's super interesting. That would be definitely a killer feature. So you're planning to support, let's say, lambda queues or any kind of
What's good about that's maybe why I really like architecture. It's kind of Legos that you put all together to build what you need. And from those components, you can build whatever you want today. And the idea is just to make like super as simple as plugging Legos all together. So that's exactly that. When you are building a production system, you are using queues, workers, lambdas, scripts. You're using external services that are not open source, obviously, and you are collaborating collaborating with your teammates. So we want to be like a kind of Figma today of the infrastructure. That's what we expect from Covery.
Yeah, that's a nice picture, the Figma of cloud computing. I can see where you're going. I have trust in what you're doing, so I really look forward for trying some new features on Covery. And one last thing before we move into the conclusion, if you can talk a bit about the pricing model, maybe for those who are interested and wants to learn more. Can I start for free, for example?
Absolutely. So first, we are not aligned with the interest of the cloud provider, which is selling you like maybe more resources. So we are completely aligned with the interest of our customers. We are not selling that at all. So basically, you can start for free, then we charge per deployment. So you have so you have the 100 first deployments that are free. And then from that, if you want to get to the first plan, so with additional features, so you have a pro plan at 29 bucks per month, and then you can pay for other deployments. So that's basically how we works. We want to democratize. We want to make it like super affordable to anyone to get the deployment stack of their dream, and that's what we're doing, and that's why our customers love the query. So yeah, that's basically how it works in terms of pricing today.
Okay, that's really awesome. Thanks a lot for being here. Has been an incredible episode. I really hope to maybe have an opportunity to talk again in the future when new features come out, because I feel like that would be game changer in the cloud industry. And I'm really, really curious about the future of Covery. So thank you again. Have a nice rest of the day, and thanks again for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mikael. Thank you for having me. Take care.